All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am giving you my rapid reaction to the Falcons' 2018 season opening loss to the Philadelphia Eagles.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the team for a very long time at FalcFans.com. You can find me on Twitter at FalcFans. And of course, I am the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today, we are sort of recapping the Falcons week one, 18-12 loss to the Philadelphia Eagles to kick off their 2018 season with an 0-1 start. We're going to talk quite a bit about the red zone issues. We'll talk about Sark. We'll talk about the positive performances from the defense. We'll talk about the officiating. We'll talk about the injuries, various topics. You know, it's a frustrating loss. It was a sloppy performance, a lot of penalties, and we'll talk about that when we get to the officiating towards the end of the show. You know, I certainly, as regular listeners of this podcast over the last week, knew that I wasn't necessarily going into this game with a ton of confidence. But I'm not going to sit here and be like, I told you so, but I won't promise that there won't be some I told you so's a little bit later on when we get into some of these deeper discussions. Let's start things off talking about where the game started, and it was a very interesting start. With the game starting about 45 minutes late, the kickoff was delayed due to thunderstorms and rain, set up some wet field conditions. Probably, you know, it was a pretty hot day, hot, muggy day in Philadelphia, up in the upper 80s. I think it was, you know, in the low 90s during the day. That probably contributed to some of the injuries. Are the cramps that we saw with several Falcon defenders, including Desmond Trufant, including Deion Jones, Tack McKinley, all of those guys seem to exit the game at various points to deal with those cramp issues. I don't know, you know, I don't necessarily know if we can look at the late start and say, you know, it affected one team more than the other. It probably wound up balancing out for both teams, but certainly maybe, you know, some of that energy that the guys had, you know, ready to go for 8:20, maybe by the time we started at, you know, 9:05, which, you know, if the game had gone on through its regular scheduled time, it should have been wrapping up around 11:30. But I think around 11:30, they were just ending the third quarter. And so maybe that had something to do with some of the issues that we saw late with the, particularly the defense sort of running out of gas towards the end of the game. But, you know, that's something we'll discuss about a little later. Let's talk about those injuries. The most notable of them was Keanu Neal, appeared to suffer a significant knee injury. But according to Dan Quinn in his post-game press conference, he seemed to say that he thought Neal avoided any serious injury. But Neal first got injured on non-contact midway through the second quarter, came back a series or so later to finish out the first half. And then on the opening drive of the third quarter, played through that drive. And then on the last play of that drive, seemingly re-injured, re-aggravated, whatever that injury was in his left knee. And, it, you know, it seemed rather serious at the time. He did not come back into the game. And it was concerned. But hopefully Dan Quinn, you know, has gotten an update from the training staff, you know. If it was a serious injury, we'll find out in the coming days, but you do have to maybe ask questions about the Falcons training staff. Maybe they didn't necessarily do a great job on that initial prognosis to see if it was an issue that Neal could or should have been playing on. But again, sitting here today without enough information, that's just me speculating and somewhat, you know, blaming. I don't want to see Keanu Neal be injured. As you regular listeners know that I'm a huge, huge fan of Keanu Neal. So, you know, I don't want to see my baby get hurt, as they might say. But we saw DeMonte Casey step in, played pretty well, you know, made some plays, didn't make the one play I wish he would have made, making that tackle on Ajayi at the end. But he certainly made some plays, and it really helped put this team in a position to win the game. most notably the interception that he forced on the tip pass when he blew up a pass to Dallas Goedert that was picked off by Deion Jones, and the Falcons scored their only touchdown off of that. You know, the fascinating thing about this game was sort of how much it mirrored the last time we played the Eagles, where seemingly a muffed punt, there was a turnover that led to points. It was just, you know, and then it comes down to the wire at the end. Falcons with multiple opportunities with goal to go to score, and, you know, a final pass to Julio Jones on a fade out of bounds. You know, it was pretty much the same game. It was the same game. I believe that game also started off with the Falcons getting out to a 3-0 lead pretty early in that game as well. So, you know, side tangent, but let's talk a little bit more about some of these injuries before we move on. We also saw Vic Beasley get evaluated early in the game for a concussion. We saw Devontae Freeman exit the game with a knee injury. Didn't see anything about the seriousness of that injury. Hopefully it's nothing too serious. He was walking around on it, but the Falcons basically decided not to put him back out on the field. Maybe that had something to do with the fact that, you know, Neil also re-aggravated that injury, and they don't necessarily feel as compelled to put any further injury risk on Devontae Freeman. We'll find out sort of how serious that issue is. We saw Austin Hooper also exit the game with a knee injury. He did, however, come back on that final drive. And again, as I mentioned, multiple players missing time due to cramps and whatnot. So the concern you have to have is, you know, one of the things that I've talked about before is the Falcons have sort of been unnaturally able to avoid injuries in the Dan Quinn era, and to the point where you think there's maybe something in the water down there in Flowery Branch, or this training staff is exceptionally good, you know. And you do you wonder, like, eventually that's going to have to, you know, that pendulum is going to have to swing back. And given the injuries that were suffered in this game, and given the fact that four players were sat out this game due to injuries, you do wonder, it does open the door to, you know, and certainly given my fatalistic and or pessimistic tendencies, or at least trains of thought, that maybe this is the year for that to happen. But we'll have to find out as, you know, the next couple of days, and maybe the Falcons maybe dodged a bullet potentially with some of these injuries being not as serious as they seem to be initially. With that being said, we're going to move on and talk a lot more about the red zone issues that the Falcons face, and we'll talk quite a bit about Steve Sarkisian. But in the meantime, I do want to let you guys know that Locked On Podcast Network has now expanded into the college arena, launching shows for Alabama, Arkansas, Kentucky, Tennessee, Florida State, Oklahoma, Baylor, Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon, with many more to come this year. Find them wherever you get your podcasts. Part of Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So let's talk about the red zone. And the story of this game is going to be the red zone woes. The Falcons finish 1-for-5 in their red zone opportunities, converting only 1 of 5 trips into touchdowns. Their only successful conversion came on the heels of that Deion Jones interception. You know, the first two possessions the Falcons had red zone opportunities, had 7 plays inside the Eagles' 10-yard line, and only came away with 3 points on the opening drive. They went for it on 4th and goal at the 1-yard line. I didn't have a problem with that call. I understood Dan Quinn wanting, trying to set the tone. That's been, you know, that was their quote-unquote Achilles heel last season. And unfortunately, you know, it seems to have carried on into this season and bit them in the butt, and they wound up not getting any points. You know, on that particular drive, they tried 3 consecutive touches to Devontae Freeman. He failed to score on that 4th down call on a sweep. Ricky Ortiz did not make a great block on that particular play. I think Ortiz, when I watched him later in the game, his play seemed to improve. But, you know, as someone who's locked on fullbacks, you know, there's some question marks there at that fullback position. We'll see what the film has to say. That 3rd down play was a quote-unquote drop to Devontae Freeman, but it seemed like it was an off throw by Matt Ryan. I don't know if it was just an inaccurate pass, if the timing was off. It seemed like a lot of Matt Ryan's passes had the timing off. It seemed like a lot of Matt Ryan's passes were inaccurate throws, off-target throws. I think his timing was really off with Julio Jones, particularly in the first half. It seemed like he was always a beat behind Julio, you know, in terms of Julio coming out of his breaks and having to wait on some throws. And, you know, sometimes that wasn't an issue because Julio still came up with the catch, but sometimes it was. You know, certainly you can certainly make a strong, compelling argument that Julio not playing in the preseason probably contributed to that. But hopefully they get it figured out. What was interesting, particularly going back to the red zone, is that on those first two red zone drives, those are two first two red zone trips, the Falcons didn't attempt a single play to Julio Jones, and it resulted in 0 points. And I'm sure many people at the time, including myself, were like, why don't we try to get the ball to Julio? And then seemingly they kind of overcompensated on the two out of the three last drives, not counting the turnover red zone trip, where they really only had one play and it was a run by Tevin Coleman that led to a score. But when you look at like the nine plays they had on the other two drives, like four of them were basically Julio Jones targets. And, you know, the out of the five that weren't, you know, one of those was a sack. One of those was a hit where Matt Ryan barely could get the ball away, which could have been plays designed to Julio Jones. Two of them were throwaways, which could have also been plays that were, you know, designed to go to Julio Jones that never truly developed. We'll find out when I watch the film in a couple of days. And then the other, and one of those four targets that he had was an interception on, you know, not necessarily a great pass from Matt Ryan. You know, maybe want to call it, chalk it up as a miscommunication or whatever, but it just was not a particularly well thrown ball. And so, you know, I've never really been one of those people that, you know, is demanding that Julio Jones gets all these red zone targets. I feel like that's a, you know, that's something that fantasy owners get frustrated, or a lot of Falcon fans get frustrated, because they've had the old, you know, they've gotten in so many fights about Julio versus Antonio Brown, and the lack of touchdowns is always thrown in their face, and say, you know, they got a personal beef with that. That's my opinion on the matter. I've always sort of felt that the Falcons offense functions better when they're not force feeding Julio the ball in the red zone. Now, is that necessarily, you know, simply because giving, you know, targeting Julio is bad, or maybe it's just because our offensive coordinators, our play calls just haven't been great at finding ways to get him the ball outside of fades and lobs, and that seemingly was the case tonight. But, you know, that those types of plays can work for other receivers and certainly for other teams, but I don't think those types of plays have ever really been Matt Ryan's bread and butter, his strong suit, and I think that's probably a contributing factor to why it doesn't seemingly work as well here in Atlanta. You know, but at the same time, like, I certainly wouldn't be, I don't begrudge the Falcons for wanting to get the ball into the hands of their best playmakers. And the Falcons did that extremely well tonight between the 20s. It just all, you know, ground down to a halt once we got into the red zone and things got tight. Julio finished the game with 19 targets, 10 catches for 169 yards. It should have been probably at least 11 catches for 221 yards, if not for, I think it was a 52-yard play that was wiped out due to a questionable ruling by the officials on, you know, with the new catch rule being in place and ruling a catch that seemed like most people seem to agree should have been a catch, was not called a catch. I'm glad that the league cleared that up, but we'll talk about that later. You know, but Julio balled out tonight. Unfortunately, again, when we get to the red zone, yeah, not so much. And that, I don't, again, I don't want anybody to interpret that as me blaming that on Julio or anything like that. But, you know, I know some people are like, well, that's a Sark issue. It's clearly Sark's play calling is terrible. Fire Sark. You guys know me, regular listeners know me. I tend to not to be judgmental about play calling until I see the All 22. Because I just don't think you can judge it accurately without watching the All 22. I think most of the, you know, that's been part of my issue with the whole Sark criticism, is I feel like a lot of the critiques that Sark gets just aren't fair criticisms, and the critiques that he deserves, no one criticizes him, because you can only do that if you actually watch the film. It's the why did he call that screen pass on that third down? Why did he call that play on that second and goal? That's the critiques he gets, which I don't think are necessarily as well deserved as they often get pushed out there. I think the things that you should criticize Sark for is the concepts, the designs, the route combinations, those types of things with his offense. You know, and we'll find out if that's the case tonight. Looking at the game at first glance, you know, my initial impression, I thought he did some positive things. I thought he did some negative things. And it all sort of balances out to being a pretty middling performance. I think that's basically been what has been the case with Sark since he joined up here in Atlanta, just pretty middling performances. There were drops, there were off-target throws, there was pressure. So there certainly were execution issues that the Falcons had to deal with and try to overcompensate. One of the positives I can say about what Sark did was I thought, you know, they did do a better job designing up some shot plays off of play action, including that failed bomb to Julio Jones, which, you know, we can debate again. You know, maybe that wasn't the best throw by Matt Ryan or whatnot, but, you know, obviously it still should have been a catch. But again, we'll talk about that later when we get a little bit more into the officiating specifically. You know, like, for me, it's like, looking at Sark, like, I'm like, you know, this is going to be one of those moments when I say I told you so, but, like, what did you guys expect? Like, this is kind of what I've been talking about for the last week. Like, one of my biggest beefs, and, you know, I always have a new big beef with Sark, so I can't say my biggest beef, but it's probably one of the two or three biggest beefs I have, and, you know, in a constant rotation for what, who, you know, vying for, which is my number one biggest beef with Sark, but, you know, when you face these formidable fronts that can control the line of scrimmage and your offensive coordinator is not necessarily bringing enough to the table to compensate. You know, no one's expecting you to put 30 points on the board when your offensive line's getting pushed around to the degree that the Falcons offensive line was getting pushed around. Matt Ryan got hit 13 times. But when you have five red zone opportunities, you want to see your team, you know, a good red zone offense is converting three of those. So basically, you know, if the Falcons were a good red zone offense, they would have had a minimum of 8 more points in this game. And when you lose by 6, obviously that has a traumatic impact on things. I'm not going to be the guy that talks about the postseason after week one, so I'll let that go. I'm sure I'll have plenty of opportunities to rail against Sark in future days and or weeks and or months this year. So I'll save it till we get a little bit closer to the season. But the gist of what I would say is, you know, this has been the problem when you face these teams that have, like Philadelphia, these formidable teams that really match up well with you, and your offensive coordinator is just not doing a whole lot. You know, this is why I don't have, you know, a whole lot of optimism about this team's chances of getting back to the Super Bowl, if I could say that. But again, that's not something based off of this one game. It's been something that I've thought for months, for basically the last 10 to 11 months. So, you know, I can say it now because given this situation, it's less likely to fall on deaf ears as it has in those previous situations. Look, I know the reaction to this game is going to be, we were one play away, just like we have been a number of times. I feel like that is constantly the case in these games against, whether it's the Eagles, seemingly the Eagles now, or it was the 49ers of yesteryear, and even you could throw the Saints into that conversation where it seemed like for many, many years the Falcons would always lose these close games to the Saints. And it's like, it's easy for people to focus on the sort of the one do or die play, and understandably so, but not quite understand why do you get into the situation where it does boil down to this one play, you know, on a fourth and goal at the 8-yard line or at the 1-yard line or you know, at the 19 or something like that. And I think that's sort of what is missing in the equation. And too many people don't understand that the quality of the opponent and maybe, you know, the lack of quality with the Falcons over the years, and not necessarily talking about this specific team as if it's a bad team. But when you play these teams and these teams get you to play left-handed, they get you to play on your heels with your back against the wall, you know, you're going to be put in these situations. And the realization that I've come to, and again, you know, this is pessimistic, negative Nancy Aaron, but it's one of those things where it's just like, when you look at, you know, they flashed a graphic during the game, like, oh, Matt Ryan has more fourth quarter comebacks or game winning drives or whatever the metric was than any other quarterback since he came into the league back in 2008. But one of the things is that once you give more than a cursory glance at those games, you realize like 80 to 90% of those games came in, you know, those comebacks or those game-winning drives came in games where the Falcons were in firm control of the game for the first 2 to 3 quarters of the game. And then typically, as the Falcons often do in the third quarter, blew a lead in late in the third or early in the fourth or whatever, and then sort of put one good drive together at the end of the game to sort of quote-unquote reclaim victory. They're not really a team that's going to, you know, play with their backs against the wall for 2 or 3 quarters and then, you know, pull it out in the end. But, you know, that being said, they had that opportunity to do that. We've seen them do that, a couple of times. It's not necessarily a common occurrence, but, it's certainly frustrating and disappointing that they had multiple opportunities to do so again tonight against the Eagles, and they did not find a way to do it. But I'll be honest with you, you know, when they got the ball back with 2 minutes left to go, you know, I was just like, yeah, I've seen this before. They're going to lose. But at the same time, I knew intellectually, or maybe I knew intellectually that they would lose given the odds were stacked against them. But emotionally, I still believed that they had a shot. You know, that's the fan part, you know. It is what it is. I don't know what else to say. But we'll talk more about this offense. We'll talk more about what the Falcons need or shouldn't do in the red zone, how do they fix it. You know, all those sorts of things that I'm sure you guys have plenty of questions about when I get to watch the All-22. But I will reserve my hottest takes until after I've seen the film. I'm not going to necessarily blow my wad this early yet without having watched the film. That being said, let's move on and let's talk about the defense. Let's wrap things up by talking about the defense and the officiating. But before we do, I want to let you guys know that it's crunch time for fantasy football. Obviously, your leagues have already started, but Locked On is now hosting a new fantasy football show called Locked On Fantasy Football 24/7. That show will give you the latest trends, the hottest roster moves, and where to get that extra edge that you need from the injury expert, Ethan Turner, that's going to help you guys win your league. Locked On Fantasy Football 24/7 is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So let's wrap things up on a little bit more positive note. I could probably spend 20 minutes just to balance things out, you know, and talk about how good the defense played. I got some nitpicks. I wasn't too impressed with the pass rush. They did okay. You know, they got 4 hits on Foles. I don't think that's good enough. I want to see more. But again, given I think the Eagles, you know, Pro Football Focus seems to agree, they have arguably the best league offensive line in the league, given, you know, the issues that the Cowboys now have. The fact that they only got 4 hits on Foles doesn't surprise me one bit. They got 2 sacks. They got some pressures. I won't sit here and say the rush was non-existent, but I didn't think necessarily did enough to really affect the outcome of the game in any meaningful ways, particularly in contrast to the Eagles pass rush, who hit Matt Ryan 13 times again. I don't think it's a coincidence that Matt Ryan looked a little bit off tonight and he got hit 13 times. We've talked about that a bunch on the show over the years. But look, the defense played well. They certainly, I don't want anybody to get the wrong impression that I'm clowning on defense. Again, wanted a little bit more from them, but that's just the high standards I have. They certainly played more than good enough to win this game and against a team with less talented offensive line, which we'll hopefully be seeing in the coming weeks, certainly next week against Carolina, although I think the injury to Matt Khalil, I think a lot of people will naturally perceive that as, oh, the Panthers' offensive line is terrible, but in all honesty, their offensive line is way better without Matt Khalil in the lineup. But we'll talk about that next week's shows when we get there. But, I think the defense played well. They got some 3-and-outs. They obviously got a turnover. They got some stops. They just needed one more stop. They didn't get it. But, again, no one's going to be mad at the defense too much. It's mostly nitpicking. They gave up 18 points. Again, the Falcons' offense should have at least had 20 points in this game, at least. So it's one of those things. So this should have been a 20-18 win. And, again, Casey missed the tackle on the Giants touchdown run. Deion Jones was sort of out of his gap on, you know, 2 plays prior to that on 3rd and short on a big run by, I think it was Corey Clement. But other than that, those guys played well. I don't think it's a coincidence. You know, the run defense wasn't great in the second half. I don't think it's a coincidence that the run defense fell off a cliff in the second half. And Keanu Neal also got hurt in the second half. You know, in the first half, the Falcons gave up, you know, discounting the one kneel down that Foles had. They gave up 17 rushing yards on 9 carries, less than 2 yards a carry. In the second half, they gave up 97 yards on 17 carries. And then when you factor in, you know, which of those runs were after Neal exited the game, it was 93 yards on 15 carries. So over 6 yards per carry that they gave up. I'm sure that, you know, I didn't calculate the success rate, but I'm sure it's not very positive. It's some big gashing runs towards the end that sort of padded that total a little bit, probably more to boost that yards per carry rate up a little bit higher towards the end. Probably not a coincidence that that's around the time when the defense started running the gas. So I'm not too upset about the defense. I'm only nitpicking because, you know, I got to. But I think they did some positive things, and it does give me a little bit more confidence that against lesser offensive lines, maybe we'll see this pass rush assert itself. I thought the coverage was really good. I thought early in the game, you know, Aguilar was pretty much shut down. Zach Ertz was pretty much shut down. Good, you know, probably one of, you know, I've been critical of Devondre Campbell's ability to cover tight ends like Ertz. And I wouldn't say like he was sticking to him like a glove by any means, but in the reality that, you know, without Neal in the lineup, that he had to carry a huge part of that load, you know, all credit goes to Devondre Campbell. So, you know, if I'm saying positive things about Devondre Campbell, you guys know something must be wrong with me. I'm kidding. But yeah, I want to be clear, even though I'm nitpicking, I want to be clear that I think the defense played really well. And so we'll see if they can sort of build off of that in future games. Certainly if they, you know, have a little bit better, more favorable matchup, particularly up front. Let's wrap things up. Talk about the officiating. Obviously not a great, well-officiated game, 26 combined penalties for both teams, 15 on the Falcons, which when I looked up, you know, when they got to 14, they flashed a graphic during the game that was the most since 1999, but 15 is the most since 1990, which is, you know, the last time they had that many was when they had 16 against the Oilers, the Houston Oilers, for those of you youngins that weren't even born, which makes me feel very old. Some of you guys listening to this podcast right now that are under the age of 22 weren't even born when the Tennessee Titans were called the Houston Oilers. Like, you know nothing about those baby blue and white and red uniforms, those sweet, sweet uniforms that the Oilers used to have. But yeah, like, not a well-officiated game. It seemed like they were calling some things really tight, some things very loosely. So it was a very inconsistent game. You guys know me. If you've been a regular listener, I'm not going to sit here and go all in on the officiating like other people seem to do. I clearly, and I think the evidence clearly shows that the Falcons had many opportunities to win this game, even with the poor officiating. But there's no denying that this was not a well-officiated game. In terms of the missed calls, the only one that I thought was grievous was the Julio non-catch. You know, the rest of it is, you know, stuff that you miss live. In the speed of the game, you miss things. Like, I get it. Like, there's a certain allowance for human error in it. Maybe they exceeded that allowance. I certainly wouldn't argue against that. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to be too upset about, you know, that holding call or that, you know, defensive pass interference. I didn't like the roughing the passer call of Grady Jarrett. Obviously, I think the rule is dumb, but you know, the way that the league has written that rule, that's how they've been enforcing it. Certainly, we've seen a number of those instances this summer where they have been enforcing it that way. Again, it's a dumb rule, but it is what it is. The Julio non-catch was really the only thing that was like, ugh, like, really? Just because they had the opportunity to get it right on replay, you know, I thought we would get a little bit more clarity on what is a catch. I don't get why that wasn't a catch. I just think the refs called it a certain way, and rather than just being like, yeah, we missed that call, they were like, yeah, well, there wasn't enough visual evidence in whatever form or fashion that, you know, they deemed to overturn it, which obviously I don't agree with. Obviously, that wiped out a huge play for the Falcons. You know, the other positive thing I'll say about Sark is that the Falcons offense was explosive early on in the game. They had 4 20-plus yard plays in the first half, only one in the second, but that 50 plus yard gain on the non-catch to Julio would have been at least number two. So, you know, to get basically there being an opportunity to get six big plays against the Eagles defense, I think is a positive. Certainly given, you know, that they were dialing up play action, which you guys, if you listen to the podcast over the last year, you know, I'm a big fan of. I like the play action. You know, I like that bread and butter of the Shanahan offense. But it is what it is. So that's where we'll leave things out. I could probably sit here and go back and forth complaining about this and expressing doubts and frustrations about that. But I'll let it go. We'll be talking about this game in a future episode, and probably will happen on Monday. Hopefully I'll bring on a guest to talk about that. We should be able to do the All 22 review on Tuesday with a Q&A. So if you have film related questions, you can ask those. As I've said on previous episodes, the schedule is going to have to change a little bit because we're going to be doing crossover episodes on Wednesdays, which used to be our All 22 Q&A day. But because the Falcons had, you know, a short week, we'll have an extra day before we get to that. So next week will be different, but following that, we'll have to sort of change things up. And you guys can let me know sort of if you want to move the All 22 Q&A breakdown to Tuesdays. And, you know, we can have a guest on and maybe potentially answer those questions or push it to Thursdays or whatever you want to do. Maybe do something else and let me know. Provide your feedback on the various platforms, Twitter, Facebook, email. FalcFans is my Twitter handle. Locked On Falcons is the show's Twitter handle. LockedOnFalcons@mail.com is the email address, and Locked On Falcons is the Facebook page. So the last thought I'll say is I don't want to be overreacting to one game. It's week one. DW talked about this on yesterday's show. You know, we saw the Chiefs destroy the Patriots week one. You know, it looked like the Chiefs were poised to be the best team in the league going through like the first five or six games of the season. Then they fell apart. Patriots wound up being in the Super Bowl. So, you know, and, you know, being very close to winning it. So no one should be, you know, I think people need to pump the brakes. I get it. Everybody was hyped. Everybody went into this game believing that the revenge was going to come and this is going to set the tone, and the Falcons are a Super Bowl team and we're going to prove it tonight, and all the doubters. I get it. I get that whole fandom part of it. I'm not trying to be condescending when I tend to be a little dismissive of it, but it is one of those things where it's just the emotionality of the game. I get the, you know, and because of that, people have a tendency to overreact emotionally because of disappointment, which again, I think is a fair emotion, but you know, don't go too crazy. That's all I'm saying. Like, you know, look at yourself in the mirror and be like, okay, yeah, you know, I'm mad. You know, I'm mad as heck and I'm not going to take anymore or whatever they say, but it is what it is. You know, there's 15 more games. Don't let this be the referendum on the season. Don't let this be the referendum on Sark. You know, as I said on yesterday's show with DW, the Eagles are arguably going to be the toughest challenge the Falcons face this year defensively until we get to January. And there are going to be some other tough games between now and then. But as I, you know, I don't want to say I told you so, but it's like, yeah, I mean, part of it is, you know, I'm frustrated, but I'm not necessarily enraged because it was like, yeah, this, if you watched it, you know, if you knew what you were talking about, if you knew what to look for, this is what they do. This is why I wasn't, you know, high on their chances. But it is what it is. We'll talk about the Panthers game next week and whatnot. Season's not over, guys. That's all. Basically, long story short, season's not over. So we'll be talking about it. Until then,
you are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.